All right. Susan, Judges chapter 16.
Shimshon, or Samson in English, went to Azar, where he saw a prostitute, and went in to spend the night with her. The people in Azar were told that Shimshon had come, so they surrounded the place where he was and also set an ambush for him all night at the city gate. Their plan was to do nothing at night but to wait until morning and then kill him. However, Shimshon stayed in bed until midnight. Then he got up, took hold of the doors of the city gate and the two posts as well, pulled them up, bar and all, hoisted them on his shoulders, and carried them up to the top of the hill overlooking Hebron. After this, he fell in love with a woman who lived in the Sorek Valley, whose name was Delilah. The chiefs of the Philistines went up to her and said, "Coax him into telling you where his great strength comes from and how we can overcome him, so that we can tie him up and subdue him. If you do, each of us will give you 1,100 pieces of silver." Delilah said to Shimshon, "Please tell me what it is that makes you so strong, and how someone could tie you up and subdue you." Shimshon replied, "If they tie me up with 7 fresh bowstrings that have never been dried, I will become as weak as any other man." The chiefs of the Philistines brought up to her 7 fresh bowstrings which had not been dried, and she tied him up with them. Now she had people lying in wait in the inside room, so she said to him, "Shimshon, the Philistines have come for you." But he snapped the bowstrings as easily as a piece of straw breaks when it touches fire, and the source of his strength remained unknown. Delilah said to Shimshon, "You're making fun of me, telling me lies. Now come on, tell me what it takes to tie you up." "All it takes," he answered, "is to tie me up with new ropes that haven't been used. Then I'll become weak and be like everyone else." So Delilah took new ropes, tied him up, and said to him, "Shimshon, the Philistines have come for you. The people lying in wait were in the inside room." But he broke the ropes from off his arms like a thread. Delilah said to Shimshon, "Till now you've been making fun of me and telling me lies. Tell me what it takes to tie you up." He said, "If you weave the 7 locks of my hair across a thread on a loom." So she fastened her cloth work in the loom with a pin and wove his hair in them. And she said to him, "Shimshon, the Philistines have come for you." He awoke from his sleep and pulled away the loom pin and in the interwoven cloth. And she said to him, "How can you say you love me when your heart isn't with me? 3 times you've made fun of me and you haven't told me the source of your great strength." Every day she kept nagging him and pressing him, till it bothered him to death. So he finally told her everything. He said to her, "No razor has ever touched my head, because I have been a Nazir of God since I was born. If someone shaves me, then my strength will leave me and I will be like any other man." When Delilah saw that he had really confided in her, she sent and summoned the chiefs of the Philistines with the message, "Come up this one last time, because he has finally told me the truth." The chiefs of the Philistines went up to her and brought the money with them. She had him go to sleep in her lap and called for a man to shave off his 7 locks of hair. Then she began tormenting him, but his strength had gone away. She said, "Shimshon, the Philistines have come for you." He awoke from his sleep and said, "I'll get out this time, just as I shook myself loose before." But he didn't know that Adonai had left him. So the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Azar. There they bound him with two bronze chains and put him to work grinding grain at the mill in the prison. However, after the hair on his head had been cut off, it began growing back again. The chiefs of the Philistines assembled to offer a great sacrifice to their god, Dagon. And as they celebrated, they sang, "Our God has handed over to us our enemy, Shimshon." Upon seeing him, the people praised their God. "Our God has handed over to us our enemy who destroyed our land and killed so many of us." When they were in high spirits, they said, "Summon Shimshon to amuse us." So they called Shimshon out of the prison, and he amused them. When they put him between the columns, Shimshon said to the boy holding him by the hand, "Let me feel the columns supporting the building so that I can lean on them." The building was full of men and women, and all the chief priests of the Philistines were there. In addition to them, there were about 3,000 men and women on the roof, watching as Shimshon performed. Shimshon called to Adonai, "Adonai Elohim, just this once, please think of me and please give me strength so that I can take revenge on the Philistines for at least one of my two eyes." Shimshon got a good hold on the two middle columns supporting the building and leaned on them, one with his right hand and on the other with his left. Then crying, "Let me die with the Philistines," he pushed with all his might, and the building collapsed on the chiefs and on all the people inside. So he killed more at his death than he had killed during his life. His brothers and all his father's family came down, took him and brought him up and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol, in the tomb of his father, Manoah. He had judged Israel for 20 years.
Thank you, Susan. We've seen Samson grow from before his mother's womb up till now. We don't know his precise age because we don't know what age he actually started his judging of Israel. He's at least over 20. We didn't know that much. He started when he was of a marrying age, so he was probably about 40 years old this time, give or take. No guarantee of his exact age. But before we go into too much detail, are there any questions, something that caught your eye in this particular chapter that said, "Hey, what's this mean?" Or what's going on with that? Yes, Ellie.
I think it's interesting on verse 15. He's got three times he's mocked, but the fourth one brings forth. And the fourth millennium was when the Messiah was brought forth. Three millennium passed.
The fourth one
brings forth.
That's a great point. I had not noticed that before.
The appointed time.
It is an appointed time. Any other comments or questions?
I hope to talk about this, the seven locks.
The seven locks? Yeah. Maybe. Why is that? That's a little bit confusing for even me. I'm not that well versed in the exact numbers of why it was chosen. Yes, Susan.
What struck me, it's almost like he's in a kind of a crucifix position in a way. He's got
yes,
one
he is.
On his right and one
on his
left.
Right. And he brings him down. That is true. He's a messianic figure for a reason.
And then he went to a prostitute?
Right.
Yep. He did a lot of things he probably shouldn't have been doing. But that's part of the prophecy.
Yes,
because not only is he supposed to be symbolic of the Messiah, he is also symbolic of Israel as a nation. All right, he's actually playing dual roles. As I mentioned many times before, his life is a prophecy more than it is a judge. Yeah, he's a judge of Israel. He didn't actually free Israel from the Philistines at any point in time in his life. Yeah, he fought, but he didn't free them. All the previous judges freed Israel. He didn't free them because Israel never asked. In his lifetime, Israel never said, "God, please free us from this. We repent for what we've done." They did it to every other judge but him. So God said, okay, you haven't asked for freedom. I won't give it to you. But as we went down here, never forget Haggai, which is the lesson of Samson, the lesson to all of Israel. I will never leave you. That was God speaking. No matter what happens, God will always be there. He may not be there when you want him and how you want him, but he will be there. He'll never leave you alone. That's the deal. And that's Samson's life. God never actually left him all alone, altogether alone. He always had him there. Then we'll go through some of these little things I've written down here in a minute on my board. Okay, any other questions or comments? All right, well, let's just go straight into it. As the previous few chapters with Samson, he did things or he said things that were built on riddles or metaphors, trying to give a symbol to whoever was willing to look, watch, or pay attention as to what the message was. We had the lion and the honey, which he ripped apart. That was a very important message that had occurred to him. We had the destruction, of course, of all the crops and whatnot of all the Philistine area, the people who had attacked him, which was, of course, during the wheat harvest and the donkeys, which he had killed. But donkeys upon donkeys, you know, the I paid piles upon piles, and pile in Hebrew is donkey, so it was donkey, and he used a donkey's jawbone to do it. So he's killing firstborn upon firstborn with the firstborn. You get the Messiah upon the Messiah. You get the symbol. That was a symbol which he used. He doesn't talk much. Samson's not a big talker. Unlike most of the judges who like to blow off some hot air and posture a bit, this is the most amount of dialogue he has in this whole three chapters. He's got the more chapters than most of the other judges as well. He doesn't talk a whole lot, and this is it. So this is his, unfortunately, demise. I guess he probably should have kept his mouth shut and probably would have kept going, but he talks too much, even though he doesn't talk at all. All right, so first three verses. Delilah is another separate story. So this chapter is broken into two different stories. There's the first three verses that has a story of him finding a harlot, ripping off Gaza's gates, and walking away with him. Kind of an interesting image to try to think of, which is just funny. Just like his other metaphors, guess what? Here's a metaphor. What's he trying to say? Oh, why didn't he wake up at midnight and just leave? He walked into Gaza, and then he can walk out. Why did he rip the doorposts and the crossbar off of Gaza's city gate? Yes, Ellie.
This guy lives by poetry. Somehow that was poetic.
Poetry in motion.
It's important why it's grouped in this particular chapter. All right, and we don't know how much time it occurred between the harlot and Delilah, but this makes a huge difference. But it's grouped in this chapter for a reason, because of your poetry you're referring to. Let's discuss a little bit about what is a city gate. All right, let's do envision Gaza back during his time. We'll give you a basic description. It's a basic small city by our standards. However, by their standards, it's quite large. It's a large metropolis. There's quite a few thousand people that live there. It is a well-fortified city. Actually, even today, it's pretty well-fortified. So then nothing changes too much. A fortified city has one main entrance. Yeah, there are some back entrances and all of that stuff. And the one entrance, of course, is the main city gate. It is the most heavily guarded spot of a city.
So he broke down
the most heavily guarded spot in the city. Now, symbolically, meaning throughout Joshua and the other previous judges, as well as the Torah and the book of Genesis, what is at the city gate?
The elders.
Say it again?
The elders.
The elders. The important people are there. All right? What else is at the city gate?
The door. Also locked
the door. It was locked for protection because it's a defensive mechanism.
It's a court. On the threshing floor.
The threshing floor is there usually as well. It's a government position. If you're an important person and you have an issue with the government, where do you go? The city gate.
Yes, I'm afraid.
You don't go to city hall.
No.
They don't have a city hall. It's called the city's gates. That's who you go interact with. So, Like most things with Samson, he does something for a reason. He ripped off the city gates. Why? What message was he giving to Gaza?
You've been conquered.
You've been conquered? That is the message, or you will be conquered.
They're vulnerable.
They're vulnerable. You rip off city gate, you're now open. What did he do when he died? He took out the government of Gaza. So ripping off the city gate is actually no different than it's a prophecy of saying, I'm taking these things through your main entrance, your most heavily defended spot. I'm ripping out your government till you have nothing left. When he's taken and he's brought before the governors upon this big, massive, whatever kind of coliseum, I guess it was, or some sort of that, who dies? All the governors. The governors, the government, the rich people, the people who are responsible, they're all dead. Now, he doesn't level all of Gaza. He just takes out a building. But that building housed what symbolized the strength of Gaza, which is what a city gate is. That is the strength. That's what it is. It's the government. That's what makes a city function. So what message was he giving when he brought it up to Hebron, or the mountain facing Hebron, and left it there? Traditionally, it says he actually mounted it there, meaning he threw it into the ground where it stood, facing Hebron. Who will live and who will take you away? Gaza, Hebron, Hebrews, the Jews, are going to remove you. They will still stand and you will fall. Simple, simple, simple concept. Yes, Ellie.
He was in a temple when he destroyed everything.
It was a temple. That's right. Thank you. I couldn't think of what the building was. Thank you. I appreciate that.
That was a way of saying God went. You guys lose.
Yes. It is a wonderful symbol as well. God planned Samson's life. Remember when he interacted with Manoah and Manoah's wife? The angel talked to Manoah's wife and said, hey, I'm going to create the next judge of Israel. All the other judges already existed. They were people. They had families. They had histories. They had experience. But as we have noticed throughout the judges, the Israelite, their spiritual status has been diminishing, getting worse and worse from generation to generation, going down the tubes. To where at the very end, he can't find somebody, so he has to create a judge. And guess what happens after Samson dies? There is no judge of Israel. He doesn't make another one. Not until Samuel shows up. And Samuel's the same way that Samson is. God creates him from the womb. There is no one that is righteous enough to be a judge of Israel. But God needed someone. He said, all right, I will make it again. Just like I did with Samson, I will do with Samuel. In this case, we're ending Samson. Samuel, of course, unlike all the other judges, he never fought. He didn't go to battle, never went to the war, didn't kill anybody. I don't think he killed anybody. He was a priest. He wasn't supposed to go kill people.
I thought he killed somebody once.
He might have killed. But he didn't go to war like all the others. Every other judge went to war. They took out their swords. They ran into the armies. Samuel did not. That was not his calling.
There's another allegory for Samson, and that is after he finished his job, the job was done, that was it.
Well,
like Messiah, the job was done, nobody follows him.
That is true. Now, in Samson's case, though, Philistines never left. They never stopped. It was never solved. The job was never completed. Now, of course, yes, technically it's completed partially, only teensy speck during Eli's time. Yeah. That's shortly thereafter. Yes, Ellie.
Okay. It took a long time before the job was completed. Same thing with Messiah.
It took a long time.
It took a long time before the job was completed.
That's true. I'll give you that. All right.
It works.
No, it works. It works. Now, before I leave the city gate thing, so I'm going to go to the next part pretty soon here. Jewish tradition, right or wrong, doesn't make much difference. Samson is the one who told somebody that he was coming to Gaza.
Here's what?
Samson is the one who told, maybe it made it known, that he was coming to Gaza. just Jewish tradition. I thought it was interesting. And the reason they think that is because a harlot is a very public place. A harlot's home in Philistine life. They're quite common. Everybody knows where they're at. Everybody knows who they are and what you do with them. They're pretty fundamental. Government goes there. Lowly people go there. It makes a difference. Everybody knows you're around. And the fact he got up at midnight and didn't wait till morning is that is implied that he was planning to do so. He knew what he was going to do ahead of time. He made sure it was well known he showed up and made sure it was not known when he left. Until, of course, after he ripped out the gates. Then it's quite obvious. But as far as at midnight, he didn't wait till dawn when everybody's awake, which the Philistines, as Susan had read, were planning to wait till dawn. Not in the middle of the night. Could they have gone to the harlot's house and taken him out then? They probably could have tried. They were probably a little fearful. But they probably could have tried, but they were expecting to get him at the Gaza city gates, which they had lost. Okay, so that, I just want to mention one minor point. This whole chapter, there's one phrase missing.
And God said,
the Lord's Spirit did not come upon Samson. See, other times when Samson has lots of strength, it mentions that the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and it gave him the strength. And then he did whatever had to go be done, and then it left. This chapter doesn't list the Lord giving him his strength anymore. Why not? Because Lord, this is the end of his life. This is where Samson's going down, not building up still. The first two chapters, he was growing. God was with him as he was getting reached his pinnacle, which is in chapter 15. That's, by the way, when they mentioned the fact he had 20 years judging Israel. They mentioned 15 and then at the end of 16 as well after he died. The only judge they mentioned it in the middle of his reign or at the peak of his career. They mentioned how many years he judges Israel. Why? Because the next chapter is going down, not coming up. So God was not part of it. Meaning that it's the point that God was not giving his spirit upon Samson to continue to build up. It was time for God to leave him. That's the point. Okay. Let's move on to the next part of the story, which is quite interesting. It's quite sad. And seems somewhat foolish of Samson. Okay. Delilah. Now, I have written here, this is the Hebrew spelling of her name. Pretty simple. The Dalet, the Lamed, the Yod, Lamed, and the Chai. Pronounced Delilah. Nothing really fancy about it. The Hebrew word, which is strikingly similar to hers, is Deldela. Actually pronounced properly is Dadella, like very fast. As you pronounce Delilah, Dadella. What's Dadella mean? As I wrote down here. It means depleted. It's a play on word. It's a symbol of what she did. She depleted him. Not just of his strength, of his heart as well. She took that. She took his faith. And his strength. So there are three things she depleted. And no, this is a feminine word. And it actually means she depleted, not just depleted. It's a feminine word where she or female has depleted. It's very comical. I thought it was interesting that her name happened to be very similar to the Hebrew word. Like that's not likely a coincidence. It's probably done that way on purpose. I'll get there in a minute. There's some other points there too. Okay, so she depleted his faith, his strength, his heart, and his faith. As well as some of his goodness, too, because he actually diminished some. He's living up, by the way, a small section that's written in the Torah, Numbers chapter 6. He's living out the rest of the Nazarite vow through his death. By the way, we'll get there in a minute. He's finishing off his start of his story. Verse 5 tells you how much they really hated him. So, okay, he loved her, Sorek Brook, that was her name, Delilah. The governors of the Philistines went up to her and said to her, entice him, tell us what his strength. By means we can overpower him that so we may bind him to afflict him. No, not to kill him. Their hatred was strong enough, they didn't want him just dead. They want him to be humiliated. To destroy his spirit, destroy the God that he worshipped. There was no God with him. Look, he is weak. That's what they were after. They didn't ask for it to kill him. They wanted to wound him and make him miserable. tells you how intense the hatred was. Now, mind you, he's killed a lot of Philistines. It's not that their hatred was completely off the wall, out of the blue. They don't like him because he's killed a couple thousand people at this point. Actually, about a little over 1,000 people at this point. That's enough reason to not like somebody, especially if you happen to know who these people are. So it's not that they have no reason to dislike him. They just happen to, they really hate him at this point.
Rather embarrassing for him, too.
I'm sure it's quite humiliating. No, because Philistines at this point rule virtually all of Israel. They rule all of Judah. They rule most of the northern tribes, not all, but most of them. They have control over everybody. Nobody can stand up to them except this one guy. It is embarrassing. It's humiliating to be there, to be them. This one person has the strength to overpower a whole nation. So there's enough reason to dislike him. Okay, so Delilah goes through her works and says, all right, tell me, Samson has this issue with women. I don't know what it is. He did a lot of things with his own wife, told her things she didn't need to know about the lion. And, of course, granted, yes, it resulted in not only the death of, 30 people, as well as the death of her and her father. And a few others died, too, in the process, too. Resulted in a lot of death. Why? For a guy who doesn't talk much, he can't keep his mouth shut. Bottom line, he just can't keep his mouth shut. But God planned it that way. Because he's living out a Nazarite vow, which is what God built for him to start with. So we'll get there as we go through this process. We'll show you what parts of the vow pop up. So he does seven. Yes, seven, seven, seven. Seven wet twines. Obviously, they don't work. Seven ropes, seven locks of hair. We'll go into the process of seven. Why seven? Completion. That's what the word means. Number means. Just means completion. I mean, it's finished. The 7 days a week. God says rest the seventh day. He rested on the seventh day. He was finished. Seven just means completion. That's all it means. It means finished. There's nothing left to him. His Nazarite vow, though. Ellie's absolutely correct. The fourth time was his Achilles heel. Excuse me. The first three meant nothing. Yes, you probably have a great point there regarding the Messiah showing up in the fourth time span, the 4,000th year, not the first three. I'm most likely that is a great symbol for him and what he did and what he meant. I'm not going to go through all of them because they're pretty repetitive. Go a little bit further along. Okay. What are the rules with Nazarite vows regarding your hair? What's the rule regarding a Nazarite vow regarding your hair?
You couldn't cut it while you were under the vow.
You can't cut it while you're under the vow. What happens? Well, actually, there's a couple of things. Actually, let's go read the vow. We'll go through it real quick. Oh. Left my Bible down. There it is. Numbers chapter 6. There are a couple of rules that go along with this vow that Samson has to live by. He obeys a small number of them, and he disobeys all the others. Big surprise there. That's kind of his style. We're not going through the whole chapter of chapter 6, but we'll go through certain sections of it. All right. Verse 6. All the days that they separate, this is referring to Nazarites who are separated from Israel. Meaning that it's separated, by the way, Nazarite vow is for a time span. It's usually for like a year. You vow yourself to God, do service for about a year, maybe a couple months, maybe a little bit longer. It varies. But this is the case of what's going on here. So regarding a Nazarite vow, actually let's start at verse 5. All the days of their Nazarite vow, no razor shall come upon the head until the time is completed, which they separate themselves to the Lord. They shall be holy. They shall not let the locks of their head, or they shall let the locks of their head grow long. All the days they are separated themselves to the Lord, they shall not go near a corpse. Samson violated that one quite a few times because he killed people. Even if their father or mother, brother or sister should die, they may not defile themselves because of their consecration to the Lord is upon the head. All the days as Nazarites, they are holy to the Lord. Verse 9. If someone dies very suddenly nearby, defiling the consecrated head, a consecrated person, then they shall shave the head on the day of their cleansing, on the seventh day, and they shall shave it. The day of cleansing is the seventh day. On the eighth day, they shall bring two turtle doves, two young pigeons, to the priest, the entrance of the tent of meeting, and the priest shall offer one as a sin offering, the other as a burnt offering, make atonement for them because they incurred guilt by reason of a corpse. They shall sanctify the head that same day and separate themselves to the Lord for their days as Nazarites. And bring a male lamb, a year old, as a guilt offering. The former time shall be void because the consecrated head was defiled. It means they have to start over again. Well, that's actually quite similar to what happened to Samson, isn't it? See, he was a Nazarite vow, didn't shave his head, nothing, quote, bad, end quote, happens to him until it was shaved. Meaning that once it's shaved, he starts over again. Which is exactly what he did. He started over again as a weak, ordinary man. As he was born, so he went through his Nazarite vow. He was defiled, head was shaven, start over again. He's living out that portion, that condition that says this thing happens to you, you're defiled, shave your head. Samson became defiled through Delilah, through the Philistines. Head was shaven, starts over again, goes through the process from beginning to end. And when his Nazarite vow was continued, guess what happens? We saw him grow his hair. And God came back to him. The vow started over again. Granted, he dies. There's no rule that says Nazarites aren't allowed to die. They die. That's just the nature of life. So someone who may die as a Nazarite, that's not the point. The point is that he's actually going through the process of living this again. Verse 13. This is the law of the Nazarites. When the time of the consecration has become complete, they shall be brought to the entrance of the tent of meeting, entrance of the temple of Dagon, and they shall offer the gift to the Lord, one male lamb, a year old without blemish, as a burnt offering, one ewe lamb, a year old without blemish, as a sin offering, one ram without blemish, as an offering as well, and a basket of unleavened bread, cakes of choice flour mixed with oil, unleavened wafers, spread out with oil, with their grain offering, their drink offering. He didn't offer all these things. But note there are actually some symbols that popped up during his captivity. What was he doing? Grinding wheat. Well, that's funny. That's a grain offering, isn't it? He's actually grinding wheat as a prisoner. He goes to the tent of meeting, in this case, the Dagon meeting. God's not picky about symbols. He'll use whatever is available. And what does he offer? Himself and all the Philistines with him. Was it a pleasing offer? Did God accept it? Well, he's the one who gave Samson the strength. Yeah, he accepted it. God said, I will take your vow, Samson. This is what you want. You will die through it. But I'll take your offering, and your vow will be complete. He's actually finishing off the Nazarite vow. We're not talking every detail. Samson didn't follow all the Nazarite detail vows. He killed people. He touched dead corpses. And he had harlots. Those weren't allowed either, but he did it anyway. So he's not the perfect Nazarite. But he actually completes the vow in his death. Yes, Ellie.
One of the components of the vow is no wine, no
right.
grapes.
He didn't have wine.
Around the vineyard. Wine is life.
Yes, it is.
And this whole system cost him his life.
Yes, it did.
His hair was supposed to be burned.
Yes, it was supposed to be burned. And his wasn't burned.
Which is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, the Nazarite vow's not ended until the hair's burned.
Well, if the person's dead, the vow has ended.
Yeah. Yeah, but he wasn't dead. They cut his hair off.
Right. Hold on. Yeah, the Nazarite vow, once it's cut, if the vow starts over again.
Once it's cut. Not when it's burned.
No, once it's burned. When it's burned, the vow is finished. If something goes wrong, they have to cut the hair, or they start over again from scratch.
The only time you burn is when the vow is completed.
When it's finished, they burn it.
That's my point.
Oh, okay.
Well, it wasn't. If it's done in between, the guy touched a dead body, he can't take his hair from burning.
No.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm saying the fact that his hair wasn't burnt
Meaning his style wasn't done. Okay, I follow you. Meaning that because they cut it, it wasn't burned, thus she's reaffirming the restart of the vow. That's all. I missed that at first. I apologize. So that's what he's doing. His life is finishing out the Nazarite story. It's not every detail. It doesn't make much difference. God's not that picky. Is it the tent of meeting? No, Temple of Dagon. Is it still at the entrance? Well, sort of, yeah. It's the entire foundation of the temple. So yeah, I sit at the entrance. And did God accept it? He accepted it by giving him the strength back. God said, yeah, okay, Samson, this is the end of your vow. Here's what you need to complete it. So he finishes it. Now, before I finish here, there's some other... actually, I'm doing pretty good. One of rare times, and actually I'm on time. Let's go back a little bit. I just want to point that out, because the Nazarite vow was important to have part of his life. That's who he was, that defined Samson. Let's back up a little bit and some of the other points. The first three times that Delilah convinces him to, you know, give the ropes, give it the loomed hair and whatever else, I forgot those. The Philistines were in the room, right? Did he see them?
No,
he didn't. Meaning, she's the one who bound him. She used the phrase, Philistines are upon you. He got up. Did he kill Philistines?
No.
No, he just got up, looked around. There was nobody there. But she points out, they were hidden. They were there in the room, hiding. Presumably hiding, else he would have seen them. So I assume they were hiding. They were concealed. Why weren't they just popping up at that one instance as well?
Check it out first.
I mean, they didn't believe it. We'll believe it when we see it. We'll see if your actual strength is gone. How is it that Delilah tested these first three items? I don't understand how Samson didn't get it, but that's okay. Tested these first three items. Did she think he was telling her the truth those first three times? I don't think she did. I think she intuitively knew something doesn't sound right. Mm-hmm. What happens when someone tells you the truth? And it actually is, in fact, the truth. Well, there's a Jewish statement. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying what the statement is. The truth is self-evident. Truth makes itself known that it is, in fact, truth. That's its function. A lie is designed to conceal. A truth is designed never to conceal. So how would she know if he's telling her the truth or not telling her the truth? Well, is there anything in his life that implies that straw, flax, seed straw, or new ropes, or a hair or a loom for hair woven, give any indication in his life that that would make any sense? Is there anything in his life that any of those items would make sense? Now, she's not an idiot. She knows his story. She knows he wiped out fields, towns. She knows he broke those ropes and attacked the thousand Philistines. Yes, David.
The thing that comes to me is he started to break down when he went to his hair. Because that was the key right there. And that's where he started to break down.
He started
down.
To give a little more information.
More information and became a personal item at that point. Where he was starting to weaken in his stance.
Yes.
And it was
he started to reveal too much.
And her constantly just grinding him to the point he was sick unto death of her grinding him. Where it's just like, get off my case, this is what it is. And she could see the resolve and that he bore all of his truth at that point.
Oh, go ahead.
She would also know about a Nazarite vow because they're living that boat.
Partially. She knows some of the rules regarding a vow, maybe not necessarily everything, because, I mean, just like the Israelites didn't know all the rules about the Philistines, they knew some about the wedding rules, they knew that much. But as far as too much cross-culture was still limited because they didn't like one another. But you're right. She would have known some details about the vow, including two in particular, the two most prominent details of that vow. No wine, and long hair. When Samson reveals to her the hair, to cutting the hair was the deal, Was that enough information to for her to know he was telling the truth? Well, as I mentioned before, truth has a way of making itself self-evident. All she has to do at that point is look at him. Sure enough, yeah, his hair is actually very long. You know what? He is a Nazirite. You know what? He actually invokes the name of Israelite God, which he doesn't do, when he made this statement. You know what? He actually doesn't drink. The truth became self-evident. It made logical sense. Okay, there is something with this. There is some truth he's telling me here, because what he has now said is consistent with what I see in his life. Truth is designed to make itself known, not make itself concealed. Yes, Bill.
He didn't tell her about burning the hair.
No, he didn't tell her about burning the hair. He didn't tell her how the vow ends. He did tell her about what the hair was. And it did become self-evident at that point. Truth made itself known. Yes, the text does say, all right, she wore him down. Yes, it was his heart was poured out. She could feel it. I'm sure she had, her intuition was telling her, okay, yeah, this guy's not lying to me this time. This is different than the first three times that he made out whatever elaborate story he said. Because this could just be another elaborate story otherwise. She knew something was right about this one. That's why she got the governors, come again, bring the money, because this time it's going to work. By the way, that was a lot of money. That's a lot of money. Even today's standards, that's a whole lot of money. I don't have the exact translation now. I think currently, it doesn't say shekels of silver, because I don't know how much shekels weigh. It says pieces. So pieces may vary, but a shekel of silver, at least from Israelite definition of shekel, was, I think it was, what's equivalent today, about 16, 17 bucks each shekel.
Yeah,
it's 11,000 from each governor.
Yeah, it said each of them was
governor. That's a lot of governors. Now, there's a governor for every city of Gaza. So there are five major cities, and there are about a dozen small towns. Each of them have a governor. That's a whole lot of money, okay? That's a whole lot of money. Yes, she's likely to get herself robbed otherwise. Don't get me wrong, this wasn't just an easy task to say, oh, well, I don't need the money. It's a lot of money. All right, so was it justified? Of course not. We're discussing that, holy cow, these governors really wanted this guy to offer to pay that much money. Of course, they get it how? Through taxes. They're actually not their bank account. They just make their cities pay for it.
It
probably cost them a little bit for the gate. And I'm sure the temple rebuilding probably wasn't a cheap project either.
Be careful what you ask for. You just might get it.
That's very true. Very true. Okay, so they gouged his eyes. The gold course would make him harmless. As before, they didn't maintain his shaved head. They did it once, but they didn't think about continually maintaining that shavedness. Why? Because they're not detailed. They don't know all the rules regarding Nazirite vows. They know some of them. They don't know all the rules. That comes back. The vow doesn't end. They're supposed to just start over again. So they don't know they're supposed to keep the head shaved to keep his strength down. All right. We actually end this a little bit early, which is kind of cool. Last verse, verse 31. Well, hold on, let's go over verse 3 real quick. It says, he requests the Lord, let me die with the Philistines. Did he need to say that? Could he have said, God, preserve me from the Philistines while I kill them? He needed to say it. He needed to end the vow. That was important. Could God have saved him? Yeah. Make the temple fall around him. God saved Daniel's friends. He could save him. Did Samson get vengeance from one eye or both? Just one. Who avenges the second eye? God has to do it. See, Samson doesn't ask vengeance upon everything. Just once. Just the one eye. The other eye, that's God's business. God will take care of that one. Yes, Ellie.
The concept of an evil eye.
Yes.
Jewish concept, right or wrong. One eye looks at the world through human vision. One eye looks at it through God's vision. The object is to not look at it through human vision. Look at it through God's vision.
Through God's eyes.
Both of his eyes, his human-looking eye and his God-looking eye, were together when the vengeance was...
That's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about the evil eye regarding the, in that fashion. Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
But it says if your eye be evil, eyes.
Right, pluck it out. Single eye. It doesn't say eyes. Yeah, sure. Eye be, you'll pluck it out, but don't. It doesn't say eyes plural. Pluck them both out, because then you're permanently blind. One eye, you can still survive. That's a key thing there. Okay, yeah. So he only avenges one eye. God's job is to take care of the other one. And does he, over time? Yes. Is it just for Samson? Well, it does it for a whole lot of judges. A lot of people who have come and gone and died at the hand of the Philistines. So he does it quite a few times. And we'll get into all the details, because I'm sure one has to point with the Messiah as well. One thing I wanted to point out, which I thought was just interesting, Samson's mom was barren. How many brothers does Samson have?
Five.
How many brothers does he now have? His brothers came, took his body, and buried it. She was barren. So when God gave her Samson, she was an older, not old, she was older. He actually healed her womb. She was able to have more children. He was not the one and only child. He was the oldest. He was the firstborn. Then again, the firstborn comes again. He was the firstborn. But he had brothers. They came. They buried him. He had his father's extended family who also came. So he had a family. I thought that was cool. That God actually answered her more so than just one child. Just like he did with Hannah. Hannah had more children when she dropped off Samuel. But she was barren up until that point. Samson's mom, though she's not listed by name, same way. Yes,
Anne. The question is, was this event at the temple there, was it just for mocking Samson, or was it for one of their ceremonies?
That was actually to mock Samson. It was specifically to celebrate their god, Dagon, for giving them Samson, who they've wanted and tried to get for years.
So yeah. Everyone was just looking at Samson and watching
that
him.
That was the object. I'm sure they were drinking and having whatever else they may be doing there.
You make a mock of a blind man, you can't say where he's going, what he's doing.
Yeah, it's quite
it
makes
so
fun of them.
Put all sorts of things in front of him,
make him stumble.
Mock him, make fun of him.
Right. So it was for him. Another thing. Okay. Why didn't the other Philistines get so mad and mutilate Samson's body? He's dead now.
So they
well, not all of them. God's not wiped out. But you're right. A large portion of them are dead too, which I think is probably one of the keys.
You're trying to stay the shock.
Maybe. But enough to his family to travel from Zora down to Gaza, which is actually a two-day trip, and come back again. So his body was in the temple of Gaza for at least 2 days before they reached it.
Probably took that long to dig him out.
It may have taken that long.
Dig him out, not rubble, yeah.
So why do the Gazaites, the ones who lived, they're obviously digging through rubble for their loved ones. Why didn't they say, hey, the man responsible, let's get him? Why did they allow his brothers to come, take it, and carry it off?
Somebody had to go.
Well, they had no leaders left.
Somebody had to let them know, that's true.
Well, they had no leaders left. They're all dead.
That may be true, but people are people. I mean, don't get me wrong. Human beings are still human beings.
In that case, they all might have been laying around drunk.
2 days later, they could still be passed out.
Something like that.
They feared God.
I think that's your key. I think that's the key. They still feared him. They still feared God. Because you think this guy who's completely helpless at this point, he's of no value. He's just there for amusement. And yet, he's able to do such destruction at the end of his life. There's still fear. It brings fear back. It's like, holy cow, look what this guy did. A blind man. Yes, Ellie.
Besides, they thought, holy cow, he has brothers.
That may be true. There's more than one. That's a good point. That could actually be one of their mental thoughts. That yes, they're going through their loved ones. They're burying their people that have died and whoever else was around. There may have been a slight hangover. We don't know for sure. But they actually allowed the Israelite family of Samson to come, take his body, and go bury it. They did not assault them. There's no indication they jeered at them as they showed up. No indication they mutilated Samson's body during the process.
Yes, they just had enough.
It must
just
have been
had
a rather fearsome thing to have a
that is true.
A building that, you know, had pillars holding it up that people could be on the roof to have a person knock it down.
Knock it all down and destroy it all. Yeah, it is fearful, but the point is fear, respect. He had brothers, yeah. All came back. The same fear the Gazaites originally had during Samson's growth, during his reign as judge. It all was still there. Why? God said, I will never depart from you. I will never actually leave. I may be mad. I may get infuriated. You may be captured off at one point or another. Bad things may happen to you. But I'm still there. So the fear, the Samson's lifestyle, the Samson's life prophesied, that though Israel said no, they didn't ask for God's help, God still dealt, I'm still here. The fear of Samson was still there. Nazarite vow was complete. But God was still there. That was the bottom line. That's what Samson's story is about. That God never left. Though the Israelites didn't want him. They weren't willing to fight for him anymore. They weren't willing to ask for his help. He still never left. Any other questions or comments? I'm going to call this to the end. Yes, Susan.
Just one, Daniel.
Yes.
I thought it was interesting at the beginning where you said how God basically at the end, you know, Samson was depleted from God's
presence. Yes, he was diminishing.
There was
yes.
no mention of, and God went
right.
to Samson's aid.
Right.
Because I noticed from that, the word Delilah, as Richard said, every Hebrew word is made from
three-word
vowel. Well, the Lamed, Yud, Lamed is Leil, which is the root word for night. So her actual name is night, Lila, night. And then, so then I looked, I have vines with me, just because I love words, and this is easy to carry around. And one of the meanings that Vines gives for night, because mm-hmm. it's actually in her name,
mm-hmm.
is Layla figures deep calamity without the comfort and guidance of the presence of God. Which is actually, that's
very,
really
very profound
of her
life.
And circumstance.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes, it is.
Deep calamity without the guiding power of the presence of God. Because at the end, he did it in his own physical strength. Committed by God, but he must have felt because he knew he'd let God down.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
He cried out to God.
He did.
And God helped him. Don't get me wrong. I believe God helped him last time.
Yeah,
he returned.
He did it. It's going out.
Which is the point of the Nazarite vows. I hope it was beneficial to you. I thought it was quite interesting. Any other questions or comments? Now, okay. One last thing. Oh, this is important. This whole point of why I do this. Okay. Why are we reading about this now? Why do we care about this today? What's the point of Samson's story and how it ended now? I was thinking about this while we were doing the prayer group, prayer meeting earlier, a couple hours ago. What are we all praying for?
This country.
That God will deliver us. God will help us. God will help us be there. God will be there and help us as we are there. Keep us through it. Samson's story is no different.
He hadn't left.
God didn't leave. God hasn't left our country. He hasn't left any of these nations. They've been going through issues. It's going through the same thing. It is the same people, too, who are responsible.
Here we go
again. Yeah, exactly. Here we go again. There's a reason why this is the prophecies, not just an old story. The prophets. The prophet section is a huge section of the Bible. Judges are not just some ordinary little story. They're designed to get you to pay attention. Look what's going on now. Compare that to what happened then. That's the point. So, in Samson's story, the Gazaites, what were they doing? lifting themselves really, really, really high. Over, yeah, over Samson. Over the poor, pathetic Israelites. Using what? Their God. Celebrating their God. What their God did. Look how great he is. Look how great Dagon is. As I mentioned, it seems like a year ago, when I was dealing with Joshua, and Joshua was conquering the area. And so there's one thing that was very important that us as people, the United States and throughout the whole world, need to pray for. Just the same prayer that David prayed for. Raise up the enemies so they can fall and be taken out. That's the fundamental philosophy stands. It doesn't change. God's enemies are there. His intention is to raise them up. Get them really, really high. You can see that's easy to cut down.
Take them out.
The deal is, what's the contract?
Here you are, the heart of your fault.
You have to still be willing to go do the task.
That's not a big target.
You have to wait on the right
side. There is timing. There is timing. So Gaza, the Philistines have been lifting themselves up for years at this point. How great they are. They have dominated all of Israel. God allowed them to lift themselves up to their God, worship their God, praise their God. And then he comes down with Samson, the very bottom, says, you know, push here and push there, and walks away. Really simple. But God doesn't make complex things because people won't get them. Simple things are easier for us to get. So the point is that Samson's story actually still has application. We still pay attention to it. We still read it. Because that's our responsibility as well. Just because we see crazy things, just honestly crazy things going on in the world. Don't fear them. They're designed to be built up. God's planned this a long time. He has every detail taken care of. His goal is to get it raised up, nice and big. Don't get me wrong. You're not supposed to be celebrating it. Samson didn't join the Gazaites. Israel didn't come out and jeer with them. They still prayed against it. They still fought against it. But God's designs, he will take it out. It'll be a hard fall. But everyone will know who did it.
They'll know who did it.
Yes, Ellie.
Whenever you find a three in the text, it's messianic.
Yes, it is.
And the fact that the Messiah is going to be the one
that does it.
Down the temple.
It'd be well known. Down the temple of Islam.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions or comments? I'm going to call in. Yes, Bill.
That day they had him there, and you're saying, like, for us here today, they were partying.
They were partying.
Doing it now, too.
Yes, Islam still parties. Not, I'm not saying, like, politically correct. Not all Islamic people are evil. They're just people. A person is a person. They believe something, whatever they've been told or taught. However, religion is a totally different story. The religion is downright corrupt.
Yeah.
That is a corrupt, destroyed, horrible religion to go through. Because of what it does. It does bring death. It is hatred. That's what it preaches. And it turns people who are ordinary people into people who love hate and love to hate. So a person is just a person. Don't get me wrong. The religion itself will be taken down. Any questions or comments? Thank
would
you.
That have
yes.
The same,
go ahead.
As far as our own country goes and the laws that are being passed and the evil that's being lift it up.
Same thing applies.
It's going to fall.
It's designed to get really, really bad. I mean, God pointed out in the New Testament as well as the Old. It's designed to get really, really, really bad. To where it's disgusting. That's the goal.
To make it sick of us.
It makes it very easy to see what is right and what is wrong when what is wrong is so prevalent and so huge you can't miss it. A blind man could hit it. Yes, Ellie. I'm going to call us quits here.
If it were really evil, it would not be the bottom line test for every human being. Where do you stand? Because the evil is right there. If you want to live in it, it's right there. There's no tricks before God. I really want to work with you, but I want to go over here. All of that's removed.
so that God knows exactly
where everyone stands. There is no lukewarm position. There's no choice of being, well, half and half.
You want to know the truth. It's simple as that.
Which is always self-evident.
What Pauline showed back. It's the truth.
Yep. That's all that matters.